This week on RSVNB Update, the biggest collection of patch notes and ninja fixes ever, including lots of focus on free-to-play usability, shops, and achievements. Also, our thoughts on player-hosted events supported by Jagex, and an update on the rewards for Pieces of Hate. This is RSVNB Update, episode 649, recorded Friday, December 8th, 2017, the RuneScape Gemstone. Hello, everybody, and thank you for joining us for RSVNB Update once again here in December. Welcome back for another episode. We did have a bit of a scheduling issue due to the flu, I guess. Alex43 was going to be here if you guys saw the tweets. But instead, we got Tycho Alf, who you guys have all heard before. Tycho, welcome back.
Thank you, Shane. Ooh, I'm back so... Oh, it is so soon. I mean, ooh, I'm popular. I'm quite popular lately.
That's right. I think your most famous time on this podcast was when you asked if you got any fan mail.
Oh, yeah. Wait, wasn't that the reason why you wanted me back? Because people have been begging me?
Absolutely.
Ah, yeah, of course. You must have been reading all my fan mail that's piling up by your door right now.
Oh, yeah. Some of them even have hearts and kisses attached to them, too.
When can I have them?
I'll send them to you.
Oh, thank you. I can always trust you, Shane.
That's right. So, this week we have a massive ninja patch week, so much so that Jagex has actually called this week the December Mega Patch. This is perhaps the biggest ninja week that we have ever seen when it comes to RS3. So much so that that is the entire update this week. So, before we get too far down the patch road, I would just like to say that you might have heard about the Abbey Road competition that we talked about a couple of weeks ago, and Jagex announced the winner of it, and we know the winner here. The winner is Questcaping, who is from Clan Quest, who won the Abbey Road competition, so congratulations to her.
And she was in the spotlight not too long ago during the Halloween event.
Yeah,
she
wrote one of the ghost stories.
Family Reunion was the name.
Oh, okay, so we found that out. Nice. All right.
Oh, yes. I mean, wow. So she and a friend is going to the Abbey Road. And, of course, we were all asking after the announcement, who are you going to take with you? And, of course, this is the time where friendship really shows its true value. You know, people come to you and say, you all know me, all the things I have done to you, you know, all the good times. Why, can't you pay that back a little bit? But the friend is already decided from even before the announcement came. Questcaping promised a friend that if she would win, her friend would go, and vice versa, that if her friend won, she would go. I won't announce who it is. I will leave that to Questcaping herself to announce that.
Well, with that, let's move on to the patch notes for this week. There's a whole boatload of them. I have split out the ones that I think are the most consequential, but there are probably some that you listeners might think are consequential. It's not that we're ignoring them. It's just that there's a limited amount of time. Time is finite. So we're going to start off, and they have grouped these patches into various baskets. The first one is the interface section. So this is some more work with the bank interface here. The bank will now reliably remember the custom withdraw X setting, when that is, you know, when you right-click and you want to withdraw 14 potions to mix or something like that. So that's nice.
Really used.
Oh, you rarely use that?
Used very often. I mean, okay. I use this all the time.
All right. The bank will now show the Beast of Burden withdraw option reliably, which is also another huge one, and actually came in with a ninja fix, I believe, in 16 or 15, so very useful. Also, an issue with bank tab separators appearing when searching for items has been fixed. Fixed an issue when withdrawing a searched item temporarily displaying that the item that was next in the bank slot. So kind of like that same shuffling glitch, except for when you're searching. Scroll position in the bank is now reliably saved upon closing the bank screen. Fixed an issue that was causing the total bank space to display incorrectly. Fixed an issue related to the interface transparency setting resetting itself. Fixed issues with the ribbon and ribbon setup interfaces when using the legacy UI skin, and also an issue with loading screens when entering certain areas such as Clan Citadels have been fixed. And the minigames tab no longer vanishes in legacy interface mode. The metrics graph now shows data, which is good because that is, of course, a paid feature, and survival outfit feed are now correctly displayed in the wardrobe interface. Now, just a bit of a off question here. Do you think that the bank update is still needed with these quality of life changes we're getting for the bank right now?
I mean, just a note here. At this point, I think RS on mobile has caused bigger updates than the mobile itself.
Right.
But that's a question. I mean, I watched a content stream where they showed the bank rework, how far they have gotten, and there's still a lot to do. They only did some script updates, but it looked really promising. For example, you know that currently there are only two buttons for preset 1 and preset 2
right
when you open the bank. But with the new bank interface, you can click on any of the 8 presets. That's big.
Okay.
You don't need to open a separate window, but you can do it directly from the bank. And then we have the Django and something called cleanup mode. That's basically the wise old man's way of telling this is all the junk you have. And that is a mode that I know a lot of our members need at Clan Quest. So, is the bank rework needed? Yes, I believe so. But this, everything we are seeing here are things that people expected from the bank rework. So we are getting it beforehand, which is really nice. So it takes off little of the hype of the bank rework when we are getting this beforehand. But I still think that the potential that the bank rework has and everything we are expecting from it can still be delivered.
All right, because I like the idea of a bank rework. It's just not something I feel that I personally need. So it's not a high priority for me.
But you have a clean bank.
Yeah. You think it's clean?
Yeah, dude. It's. I mean, I can't say clean, but very, very organized. I saw a picture of your bank.
Yeah, the only stuff I really haven't organized is the ARC stuff. Let me pull that picture up right now.
Yeah, but that's such a small thing of your entire bank.
Yeah.
I mean, we got people like Sira that does barely have anything in his bank at all. And then we got hoarders. Like, have Choto been here sometime?
Yeah, he's been on the podcast before, but not recently.
Okay, and then we got hoarders like Choto collecting everything and can't enter Demonheim because he can't take off his armor. Bank space is full, so like, yeah, that's a problem.
My biggest issue is I don't know what to do with the ARC stuff because I have used all my tabs. I don't have a tab for ARC items. If I could have an extra tab, that would be great, but I'm all full on that right now. Mm. So.
Yeah, I simply have one tab for randomness, and I decided that the ARC tab would, or rather, ARC items would go together with the general skilling stuff.
Right. My last tab is my quest and lore items, stuff you get from quests, or just stuff you might need for treasure trails, but that'll be going away at some point in the future as well with treasure trail update. So, all right. On to skills, D&Ds, and minigames. The spikes in the middle of Curadel's dungeon have been removed.
That's possibly the Staggle Mites, the natural spikes.
Yeah, because, you know, those are always annoying, trying to range around and get the monsters not to kite them. So that's good.
Yeah.
They added two more abyssal demons to Curadel's dungeon, which is good because I know those get really cramped.
Oh, yes.
We needed those for last weekend, Slayer weekend.
Oh, yeah. It couldn't have named said it better here. Added two more abyssal demons for your slaying pleasure. Couldn't have said it better.
Yeah. Black wool and balls of black wool are now tradable. Of course, that you get that from the black sheep. And black wool is no longer prioritized when selecting a recipe at a spinning wheel, which makes sense because, you know, you normally wouldn't want to use black wool. Normal wool is fine.
Yeah, it's a question about what do people use most, normal wool and black wool. And black wool, it's quite new to the game, so it's... Well, people have been spinning wool since... Even since Classic, I think?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Way back then.
Yeah.
Now, here's one that everyone who has got 99 Slayer and has progressed through Menaphos is going to be jumping up and down about. The increased chance of catching a Slayer monster's soul using an Ushabti has been changed from requiring 200 mil to requiring level 120 Slayer.
I'm interested why 200 million XP from the beginning.
You know, I don't know. And, you know, hearing some of the stories of how long it took to catch some of these souls for people who went for 120 Slayer and hit 120 Slayer after Menaphos came out, this is a welcome update for them.
Very welcomed.
So, and I mean, it also gives another intrinsic benefit to 120 Slayer for diversifying.
Oh, yes, indeed.
So.
Indeed, especially when at 120 you are, I mean, I hope so, considering yourself a full-fledged Slayer Master.
Yeah.
And if you still don't have the title of the 120, it makes sense you have an increased chance of getting all the souls and getting that golden title.
I agree. All right, now on to quests. A couple of changes regarding Evil Dave's Big Day Out. Leaving the GE during Evil Dave's Big Day Out will no longer try to continue the Defender of Varrok quest, which is a little bit odd.
It could be something about instant. I mean, I remember the Defender of Varrok dealing with instanced scenarios of Varrok with the zombies invading, so could be a something technical.
Yeah, probably. Also, players can no longer start Evil Dave's Big Day Out without completing the Evil Dave section of Recipe for Disaster when that was designed as one of the in requirements for it, so that's nice.
Yeah, very big.
Also, an issue with reclaiming the broom during the third set of chores in Evil Dave's Big Day Out has been fixed.
I actually tried to get an extra broom, and it said, you don't need an extra broom. You don't want to be broomed overloaded.
Oh, that's great. I think I'll also take this time to mention Colton's Informer article, Evil Dave and Doom, Doom, Doomly Doom. Colton wrote about Evil Dave's Big Day Out and published that this past weekend on Informer at informer.rsmimi.com. It's a nice overview of the quest, and you can see what Colton's perspective on it was. And he's also got some really nice pictures in it as well. So all of that at informer.rsmimi.com.
I must admit that I was more of a paparazzi than an adventurer during Evil Dave's quest.
Yeah, it appears Colton was as well, because he got pictures of some of the unique options that you could use with the broomstick and the soap, for example. So,
yeah, good times.
So if you want to give that a read at informer.rsbnb.com, you can do that. Also, just a side note here, we have updated the top of the RSBNB pages to reflect the season. Our dragon now has a Santa hat, and there's some snow on our banner.
Setting the mood.
That's right. All right, so moving on past Evil Dave here. The game of pest control requirement to start quiet before the swarm is now an optional requirement.
This and the next one complete the conquest tutorial to start the Void Stairs back is an optional requirement as well. I feel that this is a double-edged sword. We had people that have come to us and asked, we need this many people to start a game of pest control, in this case 5, and one people to start a conquest game. This is double-edged because it involves, I mean, combat and teaches you the mechanic, the mini game, and especially conquest, that is the RuneScape version of chess that happens in the quest. I mean, it's double-edged. People no longer are locked behind bars because it isn't the spot minigame spotlight. Like, oh yeah. No, I gotta wait 12 weeks before this happens.
But it's also nice to have the immersion.
Yeah, I mean, people must understand it. I mean, that's one of the reasons, for example, why we recommend people to play 5th Age quests before 6th Age. I mean, they must understand it first to a certain degree. So this, it's good that it doesn't lock people from questing, but at the same time, it can be harder when that certain moment comes up, especially the Void Stares Back. I remember doing that certain piece of the quest, spoiler alert, where you were battling the voids using and commanding Rome Void Knights on a chess piece, and I thought actually I would lose. It was so hard, and right. Then suddenly the pest were making
that same thought as well.
Yeah, such foolish mistakes. I mean, it went from a grandmaster playing to a 5-year-old kid. So, but you still need to know, oh, this piece moves this amount of movement, and it has this range, health, and you can use these special moves like battle cry and charge and so on. And it can be a bit overwhelming if you haven't even done the tutorial.
Yeah, I agree.
So, double-edged sword.
A duplicate access to Warriors Guild requirement has been removed from the Wellgothic Sleeps quest overview.
I actually have to say this. I actually have a questing alt, and every single time I leveled up an attack or strength level, it said 130 combined in attack and strength is a requirement for while Gothic sleeps. And this continued for like 20 levels. It was so annoying. So, huge thumbs up for this.
The Dungeoneering Smuggler now only has the option to change starting items if you have completed at least one Dungeoneering achievement, since your starting items are only exchanged when entering a dungeon if you have completed at least one achievement.
Makes sense.
Yeah. It doesn't make sense to have the option if you can't do it. Details for the Desert, Tyrannan, and Wilderness area achievements are now phrased consistently with other achievements. Now, here's something that a lot of people noticed here is that with all these achievements here, rune scores bounced around.
Yes.
The Ardoin hard set rune score has been reduced from 20 to 15. The Seer's Village medium set rune score has been reduced from 15 to 10. And the Ardoin You're the Dirty Rascal achievement rune score has been decreased from 20 to 15. So that's one achievement going down 5 rune score. And the Lodestone achievements now each award 5 rune score as well. So if you're wondering why you gain rune score, it's from unlocking all the Lodestones.
It still doesn't feel like it makes sense, because when I logged in, I had 600 more rune score.
Yeah, that's the sense my people were getting as well, is that, you know, there's all these extra rune scores coming in, but there's only these things mentioned in the patch notes. So it's like, what else changed? So
something hidden in there.
Yeah, because, I mean, there's only 4 references of rune score in this patch note. So There was something more to this. And, you know, people did gain rune score from this, so that's good. And I think there's like 11 lodestones now.
I'm going to count them all. Let's see here. Canafis, Varrok, Lumbridge, Draenor, Falador, Port Salim. Then we have the Burr's Hope, Taverley, and that's the eastern part. Then we have Catherby, Sir's Village, and this is 10. We got Ardoin. We got Eagle's Peak. We got the one in the south, that's Priftinas, Tirawin. Then we got Feldip
Hills. 25. I just looked it up. There's 25 lodestones. So we're both off in that regard then. But even then, that's only an extra 125 rune score. So
25 lodestones, that's actually a lot.
Yeah. All right.
But still, 25 times 5.
125.
Yeah, 125. Yeah, still far from the 600. So something would have been added.
Yeah. Now some changes for the tooltips. The Mask of the Black Demon will now correctly show the amount of black demons killed. Same with the Mask of Automaton, shows the kills gathered with it and the days remaining until you can force a new task with it. So that was missed in the original Passover here. The Ancient Reprisers item charge tooltip now accurately reflects the remaining charge. And the tooltips used for crystal tools are now accurate.
Nice buffs.
Yeah. Now, speaking of buffs, some actual changes here to the buff bar. When attacking a monster, a reflect or poison immune icon will appear above them if they have that effect.
That's
nice. Because, I mean, there's no point in wasting a poison potion if they can't do that.
No, exactly. And this had to be tested by PVMers to then be added to the RS wiki. But there wasn't really a way to know in-game unless you had experienced it or read the Wikipedia. So this is a huge step forward. I feel that some NPCs are missing this buff bar, even though they should have it. But that's something for later on. This is a step in the right direction.
Yeah. The buff icon description for the Zaros Godsword special attack Black Hole now correctly mentions melee damage being increased by 25% instead of 10%. That's good. A buff icon has been added to track the ammo stored in a cannon. This does not appear if the restock perk from the Artisan's Workshop is active. And, you know, this is great, though I don't know how many people use cannons for combat anymore, because back in the olden days with the Dagonoth Slayer, when Slayer first came out, this would have been a godsend to have this buff icon.
I've seen actually people combine this with invention. You know, they have this kinetic cyclone and Oldax coil. And combining this with the aggression potion to get them really close to deal as much damage as possible. And especially when people got 120 Slayer to go towards, people actually use this in higher level Slayer tasks like Edimu dungeon. And if of course if you can handle it, because having an aggression potion can be lethal, especially for people think they can AFK with that.
Yeah, definitely. They also added some more buff and debuff icon for a prayer drain debuff. This will display the amount of prayer points being lost per cycle, and this will also scale with equipped bonus prayer equipment. Note this number is rounded down, so 1.8 will display as 1. Now, I tried this, and I'm not sure where this is supposed to be. I have all my buff bar icons turned on, but I didn't see this. I activated some prayers, and I just could not see where this was on the buff bar where this was being drained.
I saw this at the debuff bar, and I tested it, as you said, and I noticed, and it's good, but I feel that since the number is rounded down and you don't see the decimal, I feel it's a bit misleading.
Yeah,
because
I agree.
If you take the example here, 1.8, that's much closer to the two.
Right, and per game cycle, one. We're talking about a 0.6-second game cycle. So for every
for every
1 second in game, you are losing roughly an additional 1.3 prayer or something like that, or 1.2 something for this.
So sadly, even though the intention is right, I feel it's misleading. I would have loved to have that extra decimal there.
I agree too.
Or at least prayer points, maybe prayer points per minute.
Yeah, because you know, one thing we were looking at a long time ago building was a prayer calculator and determining the drain rates on all these prayers and whatnot. But without decimals, it's really hard to calculate that kind of thing. So.
Yeah, and that's something that's really hard because that's not something people really do. I mean, most people are just taking a prayer potions and then taking a sip as soon as it's needed. They don't go with all the calculator stuff and take it down to the very second.
Very second, right. Shooting star buffs now displays the time remaining on the effect, and same goes for the evil tree.
Ooh, yes!
Stone spirits, a timer will now appear when these activate and showing how long they're active until they expire. A buff icon was also added for vengeance, and when it's been used, a debuff icon will show the displaying remaining time until it can be used again.
Yeah, that's nice.
Teleblock debuff icon now displays the time remaining until the effect wears off.
Oh, PvP.
Yeah, will be very nice for that. You know, the only time I get teleblocked is when I broom crafting in the wilderness. So. The fight kiln crystals and vulnerability, magic, range, strength, and hit points based now display a timer showing how long each effect is active for. And a counter has been added for onslaught, which tracks each time it increments.
That's quite nice.
It is.
It's small updates, but this really makes one day. I mean, normally you would have to keep an eye on the adrenaline. And let's see, oh, I got 50% adrenaline. It means that Onslaught reduced my adrenaline by 25% two times, so that's two. And then I have to count, okay, but how much damage can I increase, do with that, and I count with two. And this happens during combat. So the one rule one should make during combat is don't make me think.
I agree.
And this is something that certainly goes towards that direction. I mean, we won't make it to the old school's way of just sitting at the computer and looking, swinging one sword, I mean, once upon a time. Not to that extent, but to the extent we don't have to have these equations in our heads.
I agree with that. All right, so now a bunch of changes for the free-to-play game, and of course this signals where we're going with mobile in the future. Now, this is my paraphrasing here, but a boatload of achievements and daily challenges have been made available to all free players. The full details of these can be found in the patch notes, and if we were to read off each one of these, we would be here for a long time. So that's how many there are.
I got the whole night chain.
Oh, well, I got to get this edited and out, so we're just going to skip over those right now.
Yeah, but I know you love the podcast, and this would give you more time with the podcast.
And more time with you. And more time with you, right?
Yeah, with me.
Well, as much as I would like that, I want to move on.
Oh.
So we also have Uncharted Island maps no longer being dropped on Free Worlds. I don't know why that would be dropped there to begin with.
I mean, wasn't it that Impressing the Locals a free quest? I mean,
it comes after ports, so it can't be.
Oh, okay. Oh, yeah, you have to unlock the region.
You have to unlock at least one ports adventurer.
Ah, yes. It makes sense, so... We could put it under the teasing for member stuff.
Yeah, exactly. And, I mean, it would just appear and it wouldn't be usable. So, moving on into divination. Divination boons, including the Boon of Elder Energy that require at least 10 divination, are now members only. I guess you could get them on the free side and use them still, which makes sense because you can train up to level 5 divination.
Yeah.
Marintil, Grimy Clean, and Unfinished Potions cannot be acquired on Free World, so it's now a members only item. Which makes sense because Taroman was initially the Taroman and Guam were the only two potions you could use on Free Worlds.
I remember Marintil being unlocked at level 4, but have they changed this?
Well, it's from the patch note, it sounds as though, you know, just because you can't get it on a Free World means that they made it members only. But yeah. I think it is probably still at that point there.
So, okay.
The agility modifier or the agility level modifier for run energy, recovery, and drain is no longer capped to level 1 on Free World. So if you have a higher level agility and you're on a Free World, you can now run like everyone else.
But aren't your skills still restricted to level 5? So even somebody with 99 agility would
you would still get that extra benefit.
I guess so. Free to play only gets now run energy from 1 agility to 5,
but that's really not that much. So I mean, it's a nice buff, but still. So
yeah, I guess.
Wolves now drop wolf bones and wolf meat instead of bones on Free Worlds. Bat bones and ground bat bones are now available to free players. Bats of unusual size, such as those in the Sylve area, now spawn on Free Worlds, so large bats. Zamorak robes are now also available to free players, which I remember back in the day Zamorak robes were a decent magic item, but I guess they still can be when you're leveling up. Monks of Zamorak now have a chance to drop Zamorak robes, and Druid robes are also available to free players.
And this is quite big, because previously you could only get monk robes of Saradomin. I mean, at the monastery.
Yeah.
Now you can support both Saradomin and or Zamorak. Yeah, you can choose sides suddenly.
Yeah, and I guess that makes sense. That's a good level of immersion, especially when you consider that we do have all the six-stage quests and whatnot and the cutscene to play at the Lumbridge Crater with Saradomin and Zamorak. So that's nice immersion.
Quite. I mean, it's been quite a lot Saradomin. I mean, Saradomin-centric,
yeah.
Yes, Saradomin-centric. I mean, well, it makes sense when thinking about all the Temple Knight quests. I mean, everything from recruitment drive and going on that line. But at least we can wear red robes of evilness. Of doom.
That is my paltry attempt at an evil laugh. Whoa. That was creepy. Thank you.
Halloween is over, but I couldn't just stop myself there.
Thieves, farmers, and various other citizens can now drop offhand iron daggers. All right. I don't know why we would need just iron daggers, but I guess that's a thing.
I mean, I can expand this. I have noticed that almost every mob that drops a main hand now drops an offhand. I never gotten so many offhand dragon long swords from rune dragons before. So this is quite big. This is a huge update for Iron Man, for example, because previously you had to smith the offhand or acquire it from the Grand Exchange.
Right.
This is quite big.
And let's also not forget that offhands can be good for disassembling as well.
Oh, yes. I'm guessing they have the same drop rate as the main hands.
Yeah. There's actually a patch note about that coming up, I believe.
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
The notification when a player has achieved the maximum skill level total on a free-to-play world has been corrected from 1700 to 1869. Obviously missing a couple of skills in there.
Yep.
Energy potions are now non-members' items and can be purchased from the Grand Exchange. And free players can now also access Jadix's Herblore shop in Taverly, which makes sense because you can now train up to level 5 in all the member skills. So that's good.
Oh, yes. And for those interested in making a very small profit, can also buy all the resources there and And then maybe save them for double XP weekend before selling them off for a nice profit.
Exactly. That's a huge thing because there is that the bulk packs of eyes that you can get at that store. And, you know, you do need eyes as you are leveling up Herblore, even at mid-level. So.
Mm.
Now, some changes regarding shops, and I think this is also on the mobile bandwagon and improving the mobile gameplay experience here. Energy potions have been added to the Warriors Guild shop. That's an interesting place to put them. I would have thought they would have been better to be in the Agility Guild or something like that, or the Agility place.
There is actually an activity there that uses energy, and that is putting this heavy cannonball thing on your shoulder and then throwing it away as far as you can.
Oh, right. Okay.
On the second floor. So so it makes sense it that way, but I admit I actually, my first thought about this was, why just there? But it makes sense thinking about it.
Yeah. Ozzyak's Rune Shop now sells the Rune Plate Body, the Blue Dragonhide Body, and the Mystic Rope Top instead of just the Rune Plate Body and the dragon or the Green Dragonhide Plate Body. So giving the option here to purchase one for each combat style depending what you do after you complete the Dragon Slayer quest.
And this is big.
Yeah, but I think they only have a stock of like one or two, so it's not somewhere that you and I can go to just pick these up to
No, but
consume them.
Dragon Slayer has all been about the player being at Champions Guild and asking, but why aren't you selling Rune Plate Body? And they say, well, we don't have the right to sell it, but we can tell you somebody who does. And then you make your journey to Edgeville, and he says, I only sell Rune Plate Bodies to mighty adventurers. And then we get the quest of killing Elvorg, the Doom of Cradle. And this is big because this means that you don't need to be melee focused to kill Elvorg.
Exactly.
You can be a ranger. You can be a mage. As long as you have that anti-dragon shield on your left hand and a weapon in your right and can kill Elvorg, you have the right to be the style as you wish to be.
Yep. And I mean, that is what they want to present when they launch mobile, and they want to present something that's balanced and people can make choices and play how they want. So that's good.
Yeah, there are still things lingering from melee RuneScape. I mean, it's been a main style for a very long time, but we are finally getting a world where all three styles are equal, but each with their individual touch.
An NPC has been added to the Champions Guild that sells tier 50 magic, which is mystic armor, excluding the mystic rope top, but including gloves and boots and weapons. So once again, breaking that full Maliscape option right there.
No more Mage Guild.
Now, continuing with this, Lowe's Archery Imperium in Varrock now sells ranged armor and weapons up to tier 40, excluding crossbows and including javelins.
Wow.
Hickton's shop in Catherby now sells ranged ammunition up to rune, including bolts and arrowheads, as well as Zoger bows and brutal arrows, in addition to the Fletching Skill Cape. Which, when you think about it, in the past, you would either need to buy these rune arrows on the exchange or get them as a monster drop, and that was an expensive thing to do. So it's nice to be able to go to a shop and just pick some up and use the proper ammunition for your bow.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just impressed. This is clearly making shops in RuneScape great again.
I like that. Ryan's Archery Supplies in Remington now sells the same weapons as Lowe's Archery's Imperium, so kind of a double shop right there. The Warriors Guild Armory now sells melee weapons, including offhands, claws, and haste, chain bodies, legs, and skirts, and helmets up to tier 40. So, you know, if you don't want to make them yourself, you can just go to the Warriors Guild and buy them with some GP. So that's nice.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
Poltax and Taverly now sells red berries, red, yellow, black, and white beads, and bear fur for use in low-level defense, magic, and ranged potions. And finally, plant packs are now available to buy from the Falador or from the farming shops.
Oh yes, you have no idea the, or actually you should know the pain of having 200 tree seeds and only being able to buy 10 or 20 plant pots. You, if anyone, should know that.
That's why I got such joy out of this update, because you just get 200 of them and away you go. You have any idea how long it took back in the day to get all these plant pots that you need?
Still not feeling that.
I feel like I need to go farming again. Just one farming run.
Just one?
Yeah, because I don't do it because if I start up again, I'll get addicted and I'll get 200 million XP and I won't be able to do it anymore.
But you could create a second account. Do and going 200 million again. No, don't make that sound, Shane. It's a joy. It's
Oh,
the
I
joy.
know it's a joy. It's just a question of how to do it. But we'll talk about that at some point in the future.
Oh,
Be
I will
because
be
I
waiting for
have a
that.
number of ways I could go with this. I'm just not sure which is the best way to go with it.
There is no best way. It's only your way.
True. And I'm not sure which way I would like to go. So.
And we will see that in a later episode of RSBNP.
Saren Godbow changes now. The special attack now only costs 30% adrenaline, and a 30-second cooldown has been added to the special attack, and the cooldown is now displayed on your debuff bar. And the special attack will now also work on Yakamaru and Telos Phase 5.
PVM must be pleased.
Yeah, because from my initial looking, it looked like the Saren Godbow was pretty powerful for Tier 92 and with its special, so this is a good update.
Oh yeah, because it fires up five shots that lands randomly in a 5x5 area. So if you are battling against a man that only covers one area, it's a huge loss. But if you battle something really big, something massive that covers 5x5 or even bigger, kaboom! So I can understand that PVMers are going to be really happy. It now working on Jacamaru and Talos, something I can understand was forbidden. I mean, it may be not as powerful as an insta kill dot, but wow, the damage! And this is something I would like to see with all the special attacks, actually taking much less adrenaline and having a cooldown.
Yeah, I
Because
agree.
I don't really feel that special attacks are worth it, especially those that take 100% adrenaline.
We need to get into the mindset of treating special attacks like threshold abilities and
Yes.
just having them be threshold abilities that are unlocked with the weapon that you are equipping. So basically, you would equip the weapon, and I think they should even go further than what they have right now for special attacks. I think when you equip a different bow, the icon for the special attack should change as well in the
Ooh.
Constitution ability list. So.
That would be very nice. I mean, even the Dragon Dagger, the famous two-hitter that
Yeah.
only takes 25% adrenaline. I mean, you can just use Assault or Destroy, and it will do more damage on
Right.
15% adrenaline than 25.
And see, that's the thing with these old special attacks is they're not really useful because of the adrenaline cost with them, and also the fact that they're on tier 60 weapons, which no one wants to use, right?
I mean, you use them when you level up for low to mid-level players, and I used a Dragon Longsword for a very long time back in the day, but yeah, they should look into making them more, as you said, threshold like. I mean, if I look at Tier 90 Nox weapon and the Mirror Back and the Sarossion God Sword and the Seren God Bow, they have special attacks and they are adjusted to make the adrenaline worth it. It drains a lot more than thresholds, but it's worth it. I mean, look at the Seren Godbow here. As I said, if all those five shots hit the ground and all of them, oh no, what do I say? Not the ground, the NPC you're battling, kaboom! Massive damage.
Yeah, indeed. All right, now, Skillers rejoice. Cannons are now blocked from being placed in the following areas: the Clan Island area, the Clan Citadel, the Clan Keep, and the Clan Meeting area. And perhaps the most consequential here, the Azure, Viridian, Crimson, Cobalt, and Crystal Skill Champa locations.
That's bullying if you're putting a cannon in a spot. Oh, yeah,
that happened on Double XP weekend. And when believe me, it did. I was at the Crystal Skill Champas on Double XP weekend, and that happened. It also happened the same time that Crystal Skill Champas came out. People were messing around with that.
Wow.
Yep. People are assholes.
Who would have thought of that?
Yeah, now here's one for the Barrows. The Linza armor drop rate has been increased from 1 out of 512 to 1 out of 192.
That is very big.
Yeah.
And I know a couple of people who's going for the Grave Robber title, and I think that to this date, nobody has acquired it yet. And Linza armor is the number one reason.
Yeah, and also, I mean, the amount of time it takes to kill Linza compared to everyone else. And, you know, we did get the amount of drops for the other stuff a couple of weeks ago. Yes. But, you know, the Linza's piece I thought was interesting when it came out, because if you wear the entire set, you get a 1 out of 8 chance to counterattack when struck in combat, and that is some reflection damage. So that kind of adds up a bit along the way. But, you know, of course it is melee armor, so.
Yes.
All right. Hundreds of monsters that drop main hand weapons now have an equal chance to drop their offhand equivalent. So this is what we were talking about earlier, Tycho.
Yes.
So.
Already got that covered.
Yeah, you're going to see that a lot when you're fighting things. And I mean, whether or not, you know, if you're fighting to kill stuff to level up, or if you're just fighting to get stuff that you want to disassemble with invention, this is going to be great.
Yeah, this is a really great update. The accessibility of offhands, wow.
On to the ninja fixes now. There's now a search option in the price checker interface to look up the price of any item available on the Grand Exchange. Previously, all you had to do was just search for the item and pull it up and pretend you were buying one, and you would see what it was. So now you can just do that without needing to queue up one of the items. So that's nice.
But is that needed? I mean, going to the Grand Exchange is a social thing. I feel that they are taking away things from the Grand Exchange. It should be the reverse.
I agree. And, I mean, there's also the website. You can open up the website on your other screen or beside your RuneScape window and go there and do it. Or we even have one on RSVNB if you are logged in and you have a forums account and you're logged in. You can log in and you can see all the price item history further back than the Jagex price history of any item that we have cataloged. So you can see the rise of the Santa hat from, you know, a couple million all the way up to the 750 million it is right now. So.
And I had a Santa hat actually that I bought for a friend, and he never accepted it, and I sold it again at 160 million.
Wow.
And now it's 700.
Yeah, I bought mine back in the day for 400K.
You're really crushing my heart here, Shane.
Yeah, well, at least we're doing it live rather than you listening to it after the fact.
More entertainment for the listeners, I guess.
Indeed. The Elite Varrock achievement set now provides a reduced chance of being randomly teleported within the Chaos Tunnels. Boy, this would have been useful when the Chaos Tunnel clue scroll was a thing.
Oh, yeah. they should have switched places, putting this patch before the other.
Yeah, I agree. Granite and sandstone now can be cut into smaller blocks in a single step, skipping the intermediate steps. Of course, this is what we talked about a number of weeks ago when we were voting on the ninja fixes to bring in.
Oh, yes.
I guess this is okay. I didn't think we needed this one, but hey. So, NPCs in runecrafting locations within the low level of RuneSpan will now display the required runecrafting level when examining them, and NPCs that require level 1 will not display this.
Removes the feel of opening the skill tab and going through everything and say, oh, what level is this?
Or clicking on something and realizing you can't do it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Heffen worker and musician outfits can now be disassembled, and players will no longer receive outfit pieces once they are stored within a POH.
The first one I don't really understand. Why should it be disassembled? I mean, it shouldn't be giving anything special. The later one I understand, though. I mean, player owned house, filling your stuff. That's also something to prepare for the banking work.
Yeah, I agree. And you know, I don't have any of these, so I didn't check what they give, but maybe they might give some kind of useful, thrift-based component. I don't know.
No. I mean, the closest component would be the Seren component, but
that
would
make sense, would it?
I mean, it would make sense, but you have to augment crystal weaponry for having a chance to getting it, and even have to skill your afternoon off at the Tariad, I mean, the home world of the elves, of getting crystal armor and disassembling for a chance. I mean, this would
be there is actually
a broken shortcut.
There is actually no point in this. It's a 23% junk chance, 35% chance of simple parts, 35% cover parts, 29% padded parts, and a 1% chance of variable components.
That's XP gains, I guess.
Maybe, but I mean, these things are pretty rare as they are, so I don't see why you would want to do that.
Clean bank, I guess. But come on, sometimes you just gotta drop things on the floor and accept it.
Yeah, I agree. Clicking to withdraw coins from the QBD reward chest will now move them directly to the money pouch. Previously, you would get them as a coin stack in your inventory.
Yeah, small thing makes a difference.
The equipped name of each ship will now display within the shipyard's interface inside a POP, player-owned port, instead of the section name. For example, the ship will display Tengu Rudder instead of Rudders.
This is big.
Okay.
This is really big.
All right.
Do you know why?
Why?
Because this is the reason why I have never used my captain's log once. This is the reason why I always carry a clan Vexilon with me at all times. It gives an instant teleport to the three portals at the Tower of Voices in Priftinas. One of them is ports.
Okay.
I'm always going there to do my ports, never on the captain's log, just because of this, because I can't see it. And I have memorized how the graphics show on the ship if you have one thing or the other. I mean, the cannons and stuff, and I can see if it's back or forth, and or even two at the same time by memorizing the graphics. And I've been doing this for years now. I mean, over 2 years. So this is incredibly big for those who wants to do ports on the run.
All right.
On the captain's log.
You've now convinced me of that. The ports interface will now automatically highlight the first available empty crew slot within the ship edit screen when creating new voyages, and this will continue for each empty slot until all slots are filled, in which the default captain slot will be highlighted when entering and leaving the interface.
Nice. Yeah.
Hovering over bosses within the beast tab will now rotate their model. We believe this makes it at least 37% cooler, says the patch note.
I actually laughed at that. I mean,
yeah, me too.
I mean, I did it. It looks nice, but I have no idea why I would look at the back of bosses. But hey, I get it. It looks better, I guess.
Yeah. Hovering over. Oh, sorry, we just did that one. Ashdale tutorial now starts a player in revolution mode instead of full manual. This is big.
Very big.
Because I mean, I don't even use full manual for my Slayer. I think if you're doing anything other than bossing, Revolution is the way to go. And teaching people this from the very beginning is very important for the way the game works. Now, building on this, since Revolution largely automates combat, sections of the Ashdale tutorial, circa EOC release, explained and enforced manual usage of abilities have been simplified or removed. So they are even gearing the tutorial towards revolution rather than manual activation. So
good job. I always considered full manual to be more of a pro thing than something you do at the very beginning, especially when you are low leveled and your choice of abilities are limited. This is a very good move.
Yep. Now, the Ring of Stone, which is, of course, the ring that you can make with an onyx, turns you into a rock, can now be purchased from Tzar Herlek within the Tzar City for 303,000 tokel.
I must correct you there, Shane, because ever since the luck update, the onyx ring is now made into a Ring of Fortune, and the Ring of Stone can't be made anymore.
Oh, so that's why they did this. Right. Okay, I was wondering about this.
Yeah, and there you have your answer. The Ring of Stone is now only obtainable as a rare drop or from on now purchased for how much?
303K.
That's a lot.
Yeah, it is. And it's a vanity item when you think about it. So.
Mm.
Permanent bonfires now have a configure option to swap between fire making and cooking option in a similar manner to portable forges. That's nice.
Yes.
Because most of the bonfire use I do these days is for cooking, so that's excellent. Grigories can now be combined by using one on another, and the new swap option then can be used to swap a Grigri for any that have been consumed. Now, also on the tune of Grigris here, some of the 8 Grigris had identical names, and they have been renamed to differentiate them.
We talked about this being a very good quest reward for Monkey Madness 2.
Yeah.
And this was on the poll.
Yeah.
So I tested it, and it's good. It's good. I mean, it saves bank space and easier to differentiate. So I actually cleaned my bank like ages ago of the Grigris, except 2 of them, the Ninja and the Gorilla. So this is very welcomed, but at the same time, let's be honest, we haven't heard of any Monkey Madness 2 coming from RuneScape 3. So would you think it would be fair of holding back an update because it would potentially be a very good quest reward?
No. And, you know, I think you can go one step further with this and say that this would have been a quest reward, but if it was still to be a quest reward, if Monkey Madness 2 ever comes out, you could go one step further and add some kind of intrinsic effect to these Grigris from the quest. So I think that would be the next logical step for this. So.
Okay.
Removing furniture within a POH will now offer a yes and don't ask me again option. This resets when logging out, which is good, I think, because you don't want to remove something that costs millions and millions of GP.
Yeah, people actually spend a lot, or actually have spent a lot of money on their POH fashionscapes. I mean, remember the times of house parties, Shane?
How could I forget?
Yeah, how can we forget those times? And I were actually in a house party not too long ago where Mod Timbo's noob account called Darth Vader got his max cape. And it was just an old-fashioned house party. Wow. So yeah, good ninja fix.
The build option on furniture hotspots, except doors within a POH, has been moved to be available as a left click. That's good.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because, so many people build furniture for XP that this makes sense to do. So that's good. Divination wisps and fountains have been updated to match the color of the energy that they provide.
Divination disco.
That's right. I actually had a look around at some of these. They look good. The desert one is kind of hard to see, but aside from that, it's not a big issue, and it just adds a little bit of variety to the game, I guess.
Yeah, I was just about to ask you about the desert one because they showed a picture of it in the behind the scenes, I think, and it looked camouflaged, if anything.
Yeah.
But But I actually like the colors still in a way, but I still, a little part of me still miss the symbolic color of the divination wisps back in the day.
I agree, the blue. Yeah.
Yeah.
An achievement has been added for the Menaphos Insects of the Desert collection. It and the other Menaphos collections do not count toward the Taskmaster total, so it's not a completionist requirement. Well, this could have been something that added in a little bit of extra rune score, but it doesn't count for the 500 gain that some people saw.
It could still make a difference. I mean, if it's 20 insects and it's 10 points each, then it's still 200.
Yeah, it could be, I guess.
And then plus the 25 lodestones. I mean, that's 400 already. So
they also added an achievement for squishing up to 200 corrupted scarabs. And progress has been tracked since Menaphos release. And this does not count towards Taskmaster, so it's not a completionist requirement.
That would make sense.
Yeah. Sleigh Bells Ring 2, Fight for Your Right 2, and Game of Tombs 2 achievements have been removed from the Menaphos Pyramid Scheme achievement required for the completionist game since they were not required when Menaphos was released.
Not really sure what to say. I mean,
these seem like fairly innocuous achievements, but. Not every day we see a comp requirement removed, right?
No, it's definitely not every day.
Yeah. Boys to Mana Fights is no longer listed separately from the completionist cape requirements, as it's a part of the Menaphos Pyramid Scheme, which is the completionist cape requirement.
Yeah, so removing double requirements, I guess.
All quests now display their length in the quest overview screen, and when hovering, their quest start icon on the world map.
This is very interesting. I mean, going into the world map and you see, oh, a quest icon. What quest is that? Previously, you had completely no idea. You had to go to that location and start talking, and you had to start the quest to really find out. But now you can only hover over it and, oh, it's Ernest the Chicken, for example.
So yeah, that's good.
Really good.
Yeah. Now some changes for the quest overview screen when you are accepting that quest. In addition, of course, to the quest list organizing it by length, suggested quests can now be clicked to jump to that quest just like the required quests. The suggested requirement disclaimer has been standardized. And the 5th and 6th age footers have been simplified, removing the expand button, including a lot less text. Dimension of Disaster is now a 6th age quest. How do we feel about that?
I don't know. I'm trying to think why it's classified as a 6th age.
I mean, it's the 200th quest. It took place after the world wakes, but I don't remember any specific god interactions in that quest that would make it 6th age.
I remember references to Saradomin, Samurek, and so on.
I think the edicts were also mentioned.
It actually could have been.
Yeah, I think I remember having that debate on, or no. No, that was the debate about the vampire finale and the edicts. But anyways, different topic.
I'll replay that quest 10 times, but I'm sorry to say I'm not really sure why it's being classified as a 6th age.
Now, here's some that have been reclassified as 5th age. These were previously agnostic, as they called them. Animal Magnetism, Ernest the Chicken, the Fremenic Isles. I can see the Fremenic Isles doing that because it leads into V. Glorious Memories, Mountain Daughter, Royal Trouble, Rune Mysteries, Throne of Miscellanea, Tower of Life, and Underground Pass.
It makes sense because it's some of them are the basic quests.
Yeah, and that and lead to the sense. Other ones.
Oh, yeah. It has a more natural flow than being 5th, especially Ernest the Chicken.
Absolutely. Hero's Welcome now has the suggested requirements of One of a Kind and Ritual of the Majorat, which is good because that there's lots of info that you can pull out of those, so that's nice that has been added.
Oh, yes.
Ritual of the Majrat now has the General Shadow mini quest as a suggested requirement.
Finally, yeah. I really wanted that one because a lot of people have asking about the General's Shadow, and it's actually more like a hidden mini quest that people don't notice until much, much later. So I'm glad there is actually now a reference to it.
Kindred Spirits now has Deadliest Catch as a suggested requirement. Birthright of the Dwarves now has the Fremenic Isles and Watchtower as suggested requirements. And Legacy of Seergaze now has Shades of Morden as a suggested requirement.
Makes sense.
And they added a bunch of quest icons for rather, I guess, quests that don't start in some specific spot. And these are Monkey Madness, Wanted, Recruitment Drive, As a First Resort. That's an interesting one. Zogre Flesh Eaters, Vampire Slayer, Dream Mentor, Blood Runs Deep, Between a Rock, Contact, Legends Quest. Oh boy, you need one for that one. Rag and Bone Man, Monk's Friend, Observatory Quest, Clock Tower, Gertrude's Cat, Fairy Tale 1 and Fairy Tale 2.
This... I can't say anything else than RS Mobile is really cleaning up RuneScape. This is really... This is the moment, Shane, where you can't hide all the dust below the rug anymore. You just flip the rug and see that all this dust has accumulated and we are now finally getting it out through the window.
Yeah, I agree. It's just a general polishing up of the game.
Yeah, but it's so much shinier now. It's shining like a gemstone.
Yep, I agree. The RuneScape gemstone. Now, some changes to the reward lamps that we talked about a couple of weeks ago. Dragon Slayer's defense and strength lamp requirements have been lowered from 50 to 40. I think that's good.
Very good. I actually beat Dragon Slayer on my questing account with adamant weapons.
Oh, nice. I like that. The required level for the reward lamps of Dragon Slayer and the Knight Sword are now listed in their quest overview, and if not yet claimed, there's a reminder in the quest journal.
Nice.
The Dragon Slayer and Knight Sword reward lamps are now bankable, though they can be destroyed and reclaimed from the quest giver when needed. You know, that's odd, because we don't normally see bankable lamps anymore.
Yeah, I think it's because the XP is fixed. I mean, XP books that change depending on the skilling level is something that definitely shouldn't be bankable. And I have to admit, I actually found one thing that scales with XP once upon a time and that I banked and stocked in like the 50s before using it at higher level.
What was it?
Oh, do I really want to reveal it? Okay, it's not around anymore. It was just after the third world event that mysterious meteorites started to shower down all around Gelinor.
The Tusk of Garbage.
If you want to call it that. And you could bank them to later at Mascab hand them in for 5 reputation each. But you could choose to use them as a small XP lamp. And they were bankable.
Yep, I remember that.
So I was stacking those in the bank for a very long time until I was just getting 98 in a couple of skills and ka-ching! I could haul in the XP.
Kerblammo!
Yeah, kerblammo.
The prayer XP for completing one piercing note is now awarded in the form of a lamp, and the summoning XP for Wolf Whistle is now also awarded in a lamp if you don't want to get that XP, so that's nice. Thank you, Jagex.
And the Vampire Slayer attack XP lamp can now be used in any basic combat skill.
Oh, I thought I read that one. Thank you.
No problem.
All right, so that's it for the patch notes this week, though there were more that we didn't mention, so I recommend everyone go to the RuneScape website and read these patch notes. But until then, we got a bit of an update on the rewards for Pieces of Hate. They have expanded out what they're looking at doing reward-wise here, and they have split this into what we're working on, what we're thinking about, and
it does too.
So quest points and completion XP you're going to get for certain. Also, the Big Book of Piracy, which is a step up from the Little Book of Piracy. It's going to have its old features, added bonus of being able to teleport you to Mos Eisley Harmless, Brain Death, Dragon Tooth, and Harmony, though we talked about that in the content showcase earlier. Insights into ancient mysteries. After the quest, with the right skills, you'll be able to uncover ancient secrets about a certain location you visit during the quest. You'll also earn a chunk of XP for doing so. That's nice. That's almost like a mini quest after the quest in some ways.
Oh, yes.
So
that's good. Post-quest rewards.
Now, here's what they're thinking about. Potentially some cosmetic items, so including an updated barrel chest and barrel chest anchors that will appear in the quest, potentially cosmetics of those.
Could also be a Rabbit Jack's hat and sword.
Hmm. Okay.
Could also be. Then we got the pirate impling loot table changes.
Oh, yes. We definitely need this because, you know, right now, pirate implings are garbage.
Oh, yes. But here's the thing. Doesn't it feel like it needs to be a ninja fix rather than a quest reward?
Oh, you're right. You're right. That is the way it's been going recently, hasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, some things are such a big thing that it could be quest rewards, but this is something that it feels unfair locking this behind a quest, especially the finale of a quest series.
Yeah, I agree. There's also Brimhaven agility reward buffs and additions. Boy, I remember training agility here back in the day. And I mean, there is no way to go back there once you pass, you know, level 30 odd agility or so. So it'd be interesting to see what they did with this. And they admit that the XP rates there are mediocre.
Yeah. And once again, I'm asking myself the same question. Why would I go back there after a pirate quest finale? I mean, I will wait and see what kind of lifts and reward they will do to it, but it's not very attractive at the moment to go back there after a quest. So I'd rather see this as a ninja fix than a quest reward.
That's a good point. And see, here's one case here where we're saying this can be a ninja fix and this should be a quest reward. It's not that we want everything as quest rewards. It's just that there are better options to do that for. So I'm glad you brought that up. And more Holy Wrench bonuses. And they say this is a popular ninja request to make this Holy Wrench more useful. And while we're not comfortable with making it into an always active effect on the tool belt, we're scratching our heads for other ways to make it more attractive and decided on a nice little bonus effect. And, you know, it normally improves prayer point restoration from prayer potions. They feel like it can improve the effect by having it work alongside Dungeoneering prayer necklaces when used together, increasing prayer restoration effects and perhaps XP when used in conjunction.
This is a good statement that, yes, it could be a ninja fix, but the effect is so big, it's better to lock it behind questing. And I agree with them because it's a quest item after all. It's involved, and if it's going to be upgraded, why not lock it behind a quest?
Yep, I concur. I know there needs to be some high level content in this game that is locked behind quests. And, you know, I'm talking about the original back in the day of rune battle axes and rune longswords. Or sorry, which one? I know you get the battle axe at the Heroes Guild, but the other one is the mace, I think. Unlocking those behind quests, like the Heroes Quest was a thing. And I think we need to go back to that kind of mentality where we're having quests unlock some very useful items at high level, 80 plus. I think that would be great.
Hmm. You mean like we could lock the God Sword behind... You must at least have talked to the Saradomin knight that's wounded outside God War's dungeon and explored the dungeon for the first time.
Oh, that might be an interesting thing.
That would be an interesting thing because that means
but it
you
might
have
be
to,
a step too far because it's not an actual quest. So I don't know.
Maybe not quest, but you must have completed the Death Plateau and started Troll Stronghold, I think. So, and possibly Edgar's ruse, but that's not high level at all for a 75 attack weapon. But one thing about, if we're going back to this piracy stuff, I don't really see any mentions of the suggested rewards from the players.
Yeah, I agree.
And this surprises me. I mean, I'm hoping they're talking about it behind closed doors.
Maybe it could be in addition to that. Could be in addition, perhaps. I don't know.
And I'm hoping to, because they are actually addressing the Holy Wrench, and as said, it was a very, very popular thing for the requests. But I'm not seeing anything else. I'm only holding my thumbs that they are taking our suggestions seriously.
Yeah, well, we should have a post on this topic then, or contact the relevant JMods with this segment after the show airs. So I'll note that down.
Yeah, I will give them a comment here about that and hope they will read it.
All right. So following from that, Jagex is trying something new with their charity initiatives for the season. You know, previously we had, you know, a special effect and then the ability to donate bonds to the three charities that they highlighted back in September, I believe that was. Well, now they're giving players the option of donating to Jagex's charities by rounding up their payments to the next let's just call it the next common dollar. So basically, what this means is that you will opt in and you will pay a little bit extra for if you're paying for bonds or if you're paying for Premier Club or something along the line of that. It'll just add a bit to round up to the next dollar. And in the example they give, this person is buying three bonds and gold Premier Club, and rounding up to the next dollar amount takes it to $98 and makes a 52-cent donation.
But can I really call a 52-cent donation paying more?
Well, I mean, if it's a little bit that everyone can do, right? And it all adds up over time.
Oh yes, it all adds up over time. But I don't. It's just the thing that this small 52 cents doesn't really make matter in the wallet. At least not in my case. But it makes such a big matter in the long run. I mean, I have a couple of coins in my wallet after I'm being at the store, and I'm actually giving them to a beggar that's just outside. I mean, I see it as a form of tax. And then, of course, the smile on the face that you're actually done a good thing today, Tycho. But I wouldn't say that you have to pay more for it, because and it's just a small thing.
And this is completely optional as well. So it's something they're trying, and I mean, it might not work. And if it's not going to work, then they could ultimately end up moving elsewhere with it. So,
yeah, but this is a good move.
Yep.
That's AQ.
All right. Speaking of other interesting moves that Jagex is making, they are highlighting a player event on the main RuneScape webpage called the 12 Days of PVM. And the idea behind this is that a bunch of RuneScape players are going to be hosting 12 different PVM events. And they're for various boss critters, you know, starting off with the Twin Furies and then next Angel of Death, Kriara, next, Kalphite King, Vindicta, and so on and so forth. And these are hosted by, I'm guessing, just a collection of players here who are doing this. And, you know, it's all the events are scheduled throughout this 12-day period. They provide the information and when it takes place. It's at a variety of game times. There's some at early morning game time, some in the evening, some in the afternoon. So it's spread out all around these days so that everyone will be able to have a shot at attending one of these events. And what's really interesting about these is that it's on the official RuneScape event calendar, and it's sanctioned by Jagex. And this is something that hasn't happened for a long, long time.
In a very long time, Shane. I mean, I looked at some of the names, and a lot of the names has connections to a group called the Pink Skirts that organizes events since, I mean, I don't know how many years back, but a good while now. And their events have already been in the in-game calendar. I mean, if you hover over the exclamation mark at the in-game clock, you can see when the next event is. And you can see there, for example, P-Mod Q&A or a Corporal Beast Boss Mass. And these Pink Skirts are hosting them. So I feel this is taking it a step further. And as you said, Shane, we haven't seen this in a very, very long time. I mean,
yeah. I mean, back in the day, there were fan sites who would host these kind of events and get posted on the front page. I don't know if that initiative has stopped, but nonetheless, interesting to see this happening. And I'll be paying very close attention to see how this all pans out, because they have had mixed success back in the past highlighting player-hosted events.
I'm thinking, is this meaning that the community and Jagex are going to be more organized together?
I hope so, and I would think that would be a great thing for them to get back to, because we had a bit of that, you know, around 2012, 2013, but it kind of disappeared, so.
Yeah, looking that Jagex is going towards a more professional route, should I say, maybe nowadays, if you were Jagex, what would be the number one thing you were looking from the community if you wanted them on the RuneScape page?
Events that are available for everyone to compete in, and available at a wide variety of time slots, and hosted by professional people who aren't going to be assholes.
And then, my friend, we got that covered in the 12 days of PVM, because these people are experienced. I can justify that.
Yeah. So fingers crossed that this turns out well. So.
Oh, yes.
All right. One final piece of, or no, we got a couple of quick little things here before we wrap up. Some incoming changes to prepare for clan updates in the future. But this is a big one, and this relates to Clan Citadel upkeep costs being slashed drastically. So,
like one-fifth.
By one-fifth, yeah. So just to give you an example on the Citadel, we won't go through all the numbers here. They're in the forum post for anyone who wants them. But on the Citadel, a Tier 1 Citadel requires 1,500 timber currently. That is going down to 300. That is almost gatherable by one. That is gatherable by one person. Tier 2, 3,600 to 720. Tier 3, 2,975 to 595, as well as stone, 2,550 to 510. Tier 4, 1,690 to 338 timber, 1,500 to 300 stone, and 1,500 to 300 bars. Tier 5, timber 1,800 to 360, stone 1,655 to 331, bars 158 to 317, and precious bars 720 to 144. Those numbers are reversed there for the bars. And of course, that continues for tier 6 and 7 as well, but same orders of magnitude decreasing. So this is definitely something that we can keep up as a large clan, and something that smaller clans are now going to be able to be competitive with as well, which I think is very important in the modern world.
I mean, if this update was alone, I would have more than welcomed it, but this, in my eyes, is actually a bad thing, and you know why?
Oh, why?
Because Mojone is working on the clan avatar rework. And with that rework, they are going to remove the skilling bonus from it and tie it to the Citadel and the Fealty bonus itself. And what this means, that on the upside, you will have a 3% plus the Fealty rank of either 1, 2, or 3, as a passive XP bonus at all times. But to get that, you must skill around 50% in your citadel, and 50% is for Tier 7 citadel, 1,350 resources. Before, we had to have around 5 or 6 people capping to full to get the citadel up to date, and we had a couple of volunteers. With this, the number of people capping will drastically increase, but the upkeep is now cut to only one.
And we're going to need to find the place to store all these resources so people can actually cap and get the XP boost that they want.
Yeah, this feels like putting 20 eggs on a frying pan and then only taking a fifth of it and put it on your plate, and the rest is thrown away.
Yeah, we'll have to see how that goes, but it could be an issue going forward.
So
it's not all good, is what you're saying.
Yeah,
right?
It's not our eggs that we are throwing away. So in a way, we don't lose anything, but it gives the feeling of why do we even get these resources when we are Tier 7? So this is a great update for smaller clans that are building, but this is giving the Tier 7 clans like the sense that we are throwing precious resources away. We are gathering for no reason. So it's a bit of a bad feeling about it, especially with the no XP waste kind of mind thinking.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I mean, this of course can also be adjusted once the avatar updates come into play. So we'll have to wait and see what happens with that. There was also some information that we were made apprised of regarding this. And the reason that the citadels and the entire skilling areas are not being buffed or adding new ones to them is that in this rework, they would have to basically check and QA and bug test all of the various combinations of the citadels that are available to be created. And if you do some basic numbers on that, even adding one or two more skilling hotspots to the citadel and the clan island, well, that would add a lot of extra combinations that would need to be tested and verified to make sure that they work. So that's why they're not going with that direction on this update.
And just for the, how much did it take? 18 months to create the clan citadel?
Yep, 18 months for what we got right now.
So, and tune more plots, it's almost asking them to redo it. So that's a lot of development time, and development time that we know people want other things, and especially things that they can see done in a month or two.
Yep.
So, sorry, people, we won't get any skilling plots, any new skilling plots soon, should I say, which is sad. It's demanded by people and clannies, but hey, we got what we got, and let's see if we can make the citadel more sociable instead.
Sounds good. All right, moving on to some drop rates regarding this. They are going to be releasing a blog post about skilling pet chances on December the 15th. But without further ado, here are some other drop rates. So for Shattered Worlds, for every 5 worlds complete, you have an X out of 150,000 chance of obtaining the Abyssal Hound from a Shattered Worlds chest. And X is the end of the world, is the end world of the group of 5 multiplied by 5. So 50 multiplied by 5 is 250 for world 50. So that's pretty rare.
That is indeed.
Yeah. Thinker Gloves and Boots, 1 out of 500 chance to obtain either boots or gloves from a Crystal Impling. 1 out of 500.
I had the Thinker body and legs that you get for free in my bank, and I'm just waiting to get these Thinker boots and gloves. I can put them on my POH wardrobe. But it's just Fashionscape. I mean,
yeah, I think I've only seen 2 or 3 Crystal Implings since it's been around. So,
yeah, They are so rare.
Yeah. 6 out of 20 chance to roll on the fallback table of the Motherlode Maw if you have 115 Dungeoneering and you're not using Motherlode Shards. And on the fallback table, there's a 1 out of 85 chance for both the boots and gloves separately.
Yep, there
we have it. That's where you get that. Now for Rune Dragons, previously the chance for a tier 90 boot component drop from the Rune Dragons was 1 out of 512 for regular dragons and 1 out of 256 for elite dragons. This has now been changed to 1 out of 256 chance for a random combat style tier 90 boot component from Rune Dragons and 1 out of 196 chance for a random combat style tier 90 boot component from an elite Rune Dragon. So that's good. That's makes it a lot more common. So that's nice.
Oh, yes, especially in the long run. If you want some rune boss through PVM, well, there you have it.
Yeah. And now here's something everyone knew. We just didn't know how bad it was. 1 out of 2,000 chance for the Camel Staff from the Camel Warriors. And that's 1 out of 10,000 off task. Mammoth Tusks were 1 out of 25 before they were made a guaranteed drop. 1 out of 1,000 for either main or offhand Ripper Claws, and 1 out of 5,000 for off-task. And finally, 1 out of 2,000 for the Wyvern Crossbow, and 1 out of 10,000 off-task.
No wonder I have never gotten any of those.
Yep. They're stupidly rare, and those guys are still kind of difficult to kill, and I don't know if you're going to spend that much time there for a tier 85 drop. So
I can actually do Reaper Demons now since they have been heavily nerfed. Oh, the nightmare of collecting all those lore books from them before they were nerfed at release. I still have nightmares from them.
I believe it.
But now at least I'm doing it for the Slayer task, and it's not that bad anymore. I mean, while when you have been through the nightmare, everything else suddenly seems much easier. But still, that's very rare.
Yeah. All right, and final one we're going to talk about here, Tormented Demons and Glacors. 1 out of 256 chance for both Dragon Claws and Dragon Crossbow Limbs. 1 out of 352 chance for Ruined Lump of Dragon, which you make the Dragon Plate body with. And 1 out of 128 chance to roll on the Glacer boot table. And 10 out of 96 chance at one shard of Armadyl. And if you get on the Glacer boot table, you get a 1 out of 10 chance for each of the various types of boots. Also, 4 random noted herbs, 1 quorum seed, water talisman, shark, random tree seed, 2 random herbs, and so on and so forth. So, yeah. I'm personally waiting to see what we get from the Skill Pets drop rates next week, because, you know, they said they were never going to release these, but here we are a year and a half later almost, and we're getting these released. So I think a lot of people are going to be angry about this once they see them.
I mean, I'm feeling like a movie have done a really good trailer that scares people, a horror movie trailer. You watched it, a friend drags you to the movie theater to watch it, and you're just sitting there and covering your eyes. That's how I'm feeling right now. Do I want to watch
exactly.
it? Do I really want to see what they are presenting? Or should I just look the other way?
Yeah, I agree. Well, we'll just have to wait and see and strap in for that one.
Oh, please. I'm shaking right now, Shane.
All right, and we finally have the December month ahead video, and this features a comical Mod Mark here dressed as Santa and some reindeer highlighting, what we're to expect this month. And we got the Genome Project, which of course is the Gnome Christmas tile event that's going to be coming next week, as well as some various holiday aspects around Prif and whatnot, and a boatload of ninja fixes for the month. So overall, a pretty quiet December here. So,
And then we another mention to the winter weekends, but at this point it was a bit late because it had started the previous week.
And
we already talked about that.
Yeah. Menaphos weekend this weekend, just a quick reminder to everyone out there listening this weekend. So.
Oh, yeah, 50%. increased reputation. If you are not in Menafos, well, you're going to regret it when the big grind comes one day.
Yeah, I was thinking of maybe going down there and getting some more reputation, but I don't know if I'll do that this weekend.
I was actually about to ask you why you weren't there, but then I realized, oh yeah, you're here on the podcast with me, Shane.
Yeah. All right. Well, we're going to move on to listener questions. This week we've got a question from Trekkie. So with the Premier Club being a good way to make a fast influx of money for the coming year, it's still cheaper for those who are grandfathered into the $5 or even $7 a month plan. So for those who are grandfathered in, what would you do as Jagex to get those grandfathered in to pay for more benefits?
That's a question for you.
Yeah. Are you getting Premier Club this year, Tycho?
Well, I have to admit I'm lowering my playtime now for the Christmas times. I mean, you know, you have your family and you want to spend more time outside. Okay, maybe not everybody does that when the winter comes, but I do. And you do other things than RuneScape, but I don't know why, but for some reason I decided to purchase the bronze, because the previous year I also did that. I then could upgrade to silver 3 months later. So I bought the bronze, and even though I was planning to do it first in January, but yeah, and I don't think I will go for gold, but that remains to be seen. And the reason why I'm not buying gold is not because of the economy, believe me, I do have the cash, but it's just because I'm saving everything I have for the Hasselmere signet ring. I want that, Shane. I want that. I didn't glue a beard on my face and met Mod Timbo for no reason.
Okay. Oh, I still remember that picture. But, you know, just some quick numbers here. If you break it down for the Americans, if you're paying anything more than $6.62 for membership, it is worth it to get Premier Club, which is, you know, a lot of people. So it's a good deal this year for that. If you're in the UK, let's see, $4.16. So, I mean, if you're grandfathered in on the £3 plan from way back then, I mean, it's not worth it. But still, I mean, it's going to be worth it for a lot of people this year, even just based on the price that you see here. And, you know, I think they have done a really good job this year of making it something that, you know, you might want to get this one if you didn't get previous year's ones, because you can get previous cosmetic items that you were not able to before. So I think that could be something that could bring a lot of people in. There's also the 50% Rune Metrics discount, if that's your thing. So I actually, personally, I might be biased here, and you guys can tell me if I'm wrong, but I think that this year's Premier Club is actually a good value compared to previous years, relatively speaking.
It is, from my point of view, too.
Yeah. I mean, not only because of the price, $6.62, that's only $1.62 more per month than someone who is paying the bare minimum for RS, which really isn't that much when you think about it. You get an extra key per day. You get a bucket of loyalty points. You get the reward tokens and whatnot. So I don't know. I think it's worth it this year. I'm going to say that, actually.
Yeah, how many times have we talked about Premier Club? Yeah, but
yeah, just a couple.
If you haven't got the message already, it's worth it. So, as we mentioned earlier, we don't think, just act.
Yeah. And I mean, hey, if you have bond money, you can do that in game as well. Though last I checked, bonds were going for like 20 million a piece. So if you have 400 or 500 million you want to blow, you can get it that way easily. So
I've gotten down to somewhere between 18 and 19 million for some reason, but still, it's expensive right now. So for those who got it while it was, I won't say cheap, but cheaper, those people are the real winners.
Oh, there's also the VIP world for double XP weekend for runecrafting.
Oh, yes, of course.
So I think it's worth it. And I think they have done what they needed to this year to get people grandfathered into pay, you know, decreasing the price per month basis when you divide it out, and also bringing in the past cosmetics if you miss some of them. So I think they did a bang-up job this year.
Is there anything you would like to add? Something, the little wish of Christmas, so to say?
Oh, if I had to... If I was being really greedy, I would say give us rune metrics for free as well with gold.
And then put it for the next year, cherry at the top.
That would be the cherry at the top for me, and it would make me do it. So, all right, if you guys want to send your own questions in, you can send them to us on Twitter, either by adding us at RSBNB or leaving us a direct message. We take those if you need more than 280 characters. If not, we have questions at rsbnb.com where you can email. And we also have the phone number, which is 571-57BNB or 571-572-2632. All right. You ready for some tech news, Tycho?
Oh, yes.
All right. So Facebook is at it again, and they're creating a new version of Facebook Messenger, except – guess who this one is tailored towards? Any guesses?
I mean, it could be towards old people. I mean, old people, you know, you're the youngster of the family and your parents are asking, hey, how do you use this kind of thing? Well, technologies nowadays. And you use it like this, grandma.
Yeah, that could be one option. But in reality, what they're doing is they're creating a new version of Facebook Messenger for kids who are under the age of 13, because as the Facebook Terms of Service says, people under the age of 13 are not allowed to be on the website. So the way this version of Facebook Messenger is going to work, called Messenger Kids, is it's an app that the parents manage from their own Facebook accounts, and the parents get to decide what they will see. So this means that if parents only want their kids to be able to chat to certain people, they'll be able to make that happen. If they want them to only be able to go on certain pages or basically view stubs of pages in Messenger, they can do that as well and control Messenger applications and whatnot here. And, you know, I don't know how I feel about this, because it feels as though this is Facebook essentially corrupting the youth, because they're trying to build brand loyalty for people who are at the age of under 13. And once these people hit 13, they're going to get these Messenger accounts and they're going to graduate them to full on Facebook accounts. And Facebook is going to have a constant stream of new users from the current generation of parents that is using Facebook. So.
Yeah, it is as you said, Shane. I couldn't say it better myself. I mean, starting early, it's something many companies want. I mean, it goes everything from creating a slogan that makes everybody think about the trademark as soon as it's mentioned, or having such an early influence that often follows into your life. I mean, as you grow up, even. I mean, there are probably a tons of brands that have been following me since I've been 5 years old, but I'm not really aware of. I mean, you can move cities and so on, but if you still stick with your old habits, it will follow you throughout your life.
And you know, it's also kind of disturbing as well, because, you know, Facebook isn't like McDonald's or something that, you know, you see when you're growing up and you automatically recognize it, right? The difference here is that at the ages of under 13, probably 6 to 12 is what Facebook is guessing at for this and what Messenger Kids will target, is that they're just using it to talk to people. But as soon as they graduate up to that full-on Facebook account, they become a Facebook customer. They become part of the group of people who is giving all of their information to Facebook whether or not they're aware of it. And I think there's lots of young people under the age of 18 who use Facebook and social media and the like who aren't aware that if they log into Facebook on their web browser on their computer and they go to different websites that have even a Facebook like button or a Facebook share button, Facebook can track the websites you're on and tailor your interests on Facebook to the websites that you visit. And there's lots of people who aren't aware of that. And, you know, this is in a way grooming kids to be the perfect Facebook user. And I'm not sure how I feel about that. And I mean, I'm not a parent, but I don't know if kids under the age of 13 even need messaging applications like this.
I'm not sure myself. I mean, the way I feel this is also that it's also that the parents have to restrict their kids. And I mean, at that point, there are better alternatives. I mean, I already see young kids in the street with their phones, and I see them talking like grown-up businessmen do. But well, I can't really decide if they need it or not. But I'm worried, just as you, Shane. I'm actually worried. But if there is a need, well, Facebook have given it them. But their big concern is as soon as they become a customer. And as we know, especially in RuneScape, it's much harder to remove something than adding.
Exactly.
I mean, people are not going to, okay, now I'm a Facebook customer. Now I quit my Facebook account because I don't want them to track me.
Yeah. And that's something that needs to be made clear. And it's just kind of unfortunate that they have gone to what I feel grooming people to use Facebook by this way. But anyways, we're going to also talk about something that's also a bit of a follow-up from last week. We were talking about lockboxes and money in the video game lobby with Sirion and Sierra last week. But this week, it has been revealed that owners of Destiny 2 are now going to be locked out of high-level content until they purchase DLC. So basically, Curses of Osiris is going to be gating off Destiny's 2 high-level activities to anyone who hasn't bought the new expansion pack. And this expansion pack came out this past Tuesday and raises caps on Destiny 2's characters and power levels. So it also raises the requirements for endgame activities across the board. And this is, of course, considering that you bought Destiny 2 initially and you need to pay more to unlock this. Now, I can point out that we have microtransactions in RuneScape. And if this same kind of activity were to come to RS, this would be the equivalent of saying you get level 99 in this skill. Okay, you need to pay us a little bit more money to play beyond level 99. So,
wow.
So this is what Bungie or whoever makes Destiny is doing with this. And, you know, as I said with the Star Wars Battlefront issue, you know, the company is entirely allowed to try to make a profit off this. And if people don't like it, the market will speak. And I think that this is a horrible way, an absolutely horrible way to design a video game. Because if you think about it, back in the day, you purchased a video game on a CD or DVD, and that was it. And you might get the odd expansion 1 year later, but it was like adding many new chapters to the game. Whereas this is content that is in-game already and is just forcing people to pay for it.
Yeah, because as you said, Shane, when we were buying games on a disc, I mean, you got the whole package there in your hand and the game was complete. And even if expansions came after that, you had a whole complete experience before or even without the expansion.
Yeah.
And that is something that Jagex is aiming towards now with the mobile going out. But this, I mean, imagine Menaphos coming out and locking 99 to 120 Slayer behind microtransactions.
Yeah, and since that's what this would be.
Yeah, and since it was a comp requirement, we had this 3 months amnesty. The message would basically be, you have 3 months to pay you to keep you comp cape, plus yep. working toward 120 yep. Slayer. This is what's happening with Destiny 2.
Yeah, and I mean, the point is that, you know, I don't play Destiny 2, so it doesn't affect me directly. But the point is that if this is successful, this is going to proliferate into other video games. And I don't think it will proliferate into RuneScape, but at the end of the day, it's a race to the bottom ultimately for the gaming industry. So it's something that everyone should be aware of, that it's happening.
Yeah, people look at each other and say, well, he did this, so why can't I?
Exactly.
So that's the thing. I mean, if one succeeds, others will follow. And but yeah, it's I don't want examples like this to be successful.
All right. And our final piece of tech news is that Steam is no longer supporting Bitcoin for their game transactions. Previously, Steam did allow users to use Bitcoin to purchase games. But the problem with this is that transaction fees for Bitcoin are charged with actual Bitcoins rather than an actual dollar value. So this week, for example, the transaction fees on Steam were topping out at $20 per transaction. When you think about that and you look at Steam, that's more than most of the games that are on Steam. So that is why Steam is stopping accepting Bitcoin right now. And as a comparison, it cost them roughly 20 cents when they first started off using Bitcoin. And Valve has no control over the amount of the fee, and they're just, you know, too high to allow Bitcoin to continue on for a way of purchasing on Steam. And we've talked about Bitcoin before, how it's gone from, you know, 5,000 to 8,000 to 9,000 to 10,000 to 13,000 to 17,000. And it's just on its way up. And this is what's going to kill Bitcoin as an actual currency, is that the transaction fees required to conduct business with Bitcoin are based on the value of Bitcoin here. And, you know, when it comes down to it, there's also the volatility. Valve says that Bitcoin has been increasingly volatile and, you know, has lost over 25% of its value in the last number of days. So this is a problem where, you know, customers purchase Bitcoin for a set amount, and then the customer will give a certain amount of Bitcoin to Valve for the game, plus the amount of Bitcoin for the transaction fee. But the only value of Bitcoin is guaranteed for a certain amount of time. So if the transaction doesn't complete quickly, then the amount of Bitcoin needed to cover this transaction will actually be more expensive than it was. And that is, of course, Valve and Steam that is losing money with this. So we've been talking a lot about Bitcoin recently, and this is definitely one of the negative side effects of it. And we'll have to see what happens with other retailers here. But, you know, suffice to say, this is not sustainable for Bitcoin.
No, this is a huge warning signal that Bitcoin is going to crash.
Yeah, and I mean, all it's going to take is some more retailers getting out of it. And, I mean, it's going to not be used as an actual currency, but it's just going to become a commodity like anything else. And that kind of defeats the whole purpose of what Bitcoin was designed for. And it's kind of unfortunate to see this, but when it's as wild as it is right now, you really can't have anything that's solid going on here. So
yeah, unless it's something comes out that a service that accepts Bitcoin so that can give it a stable value, well, then I don't think that Bitcoin have a bright future.
Yep, I concur. You heard it here first, folks, though that might be a widely accepted argument at this point in time. We'll have to wait and see. All right. Well, that's it for tech news. We're going to move on to some other things right now, including last month's Informer Roundup, titled Remembrance, AAA Game, Squats and Neutrality, of course, talking about Alex's poem commemorating those lost in the God War, One and the Same. Tannis talking about the fall's AAA game lineup. And Colton talking about his lifting routine, in which he covers the bench, squat, and the deadlift. And of course, I talked about net neutrality and why net neutrality is just the tip of the iceberg and why we need to go a little bit further on ensuring that the internet is safe and sustainable for future generations. That can, of course, be found at informer.rsbnb.com. All right, you ready for a December Skill of the Month update there, Tycho?
If it's not thieving, then I'm ready for it.
Yes, it is the Constitution Skill of the Month. And we have actually a wild chain going here. I wasn't expecting Constitution to be one that was hotly contested, but it's turning out that way. We currently have Optimaniac in first place with 4.1 million experience gained. Second place, we have JamAndy52 with 2.6 million. And third place, Parnassius with 2.5 million. And there's a very tight race here for second, third, and fourth at the moment. And it's not unforeseeable that over the holiday season, someone will catch Optimaniac and potentially challenge for first as well.
And since its constitution has the symbol of a heart, people are racing to show the love.
I like that. So this is a very lovely skill of the month that I guess we could say.
Oh, yes. Especially during the winter holidays. Love. Love is in the air.
That's Valentine's Day.
It's not
Day.
February. Yeah, but let's get a bit of a ahead of
us. Let's get out of here then and move on to the achievements of the week. We got a good number of them this week. I'll start us off. We got Sugar Man, who got 99 summoning on December 7th. Ridley, also on December 7th, with 120 thieving. Touchpad Pro got 200 million Hunter XP on December 6th. Congratulations to the you there. Ray66 got 99 Hunter and 99 Agility on December 5th. Ms. Conan 10 got 99 ranged on December 5th as well. And moving on to the 3rd of December, CQ Sethron, or Sethron, got 99 runecrafting. Jade Gizmo with 99 crafting. And I believe that's it for me.
Yeah, then we have Siampnir with 99 Constitution on the 2nd of December. Miss Alaska also with 120 Slayer on the same day, and Choto 3000 with 99 Fire Making. And lastly, Fallen Fire, also known as Dead Devourer, and 120 Dungeoneering. Everybody on the 2nd of December, congratulations. And on the 1st of December, we got 82 and Airborne with 120 Fishing. Wow, that's a lot of fishes. Vantnik with 99 Smithing. Ray66 with both 99 Construction and 99 Invention. Congratulations. I Like Slayer with 99 Farming.
Woo!
And finally, Choto 3000 with 99 Rune Crafting.
The Bronze Noob.
Yeah, the Bronze Noob on the 30th of November. And I can tell you right now that Choto has now been given access to the Max Guild. So congratulations. I never thought that Bronze Noob, the King of Noobs, would be in the Max Guild one day.
And for anyone out there wondering, noob is a term of endearment in the Clan Quest circle. So if that appeals to you, you can come join us and guest with us in our clan chat, which is just Clan Quest. And if you like it and if you like questing, you might consider joining one day.
Max Cape being comped, Master Quest Cape, and I'm still a noob, Shane. Still learning new stuff about the game. Who would have thought after 10 years?
I got 649 podcasts under my belt, and I'm still a noob.
You heard it, folks. You heard it.
All righty. Well, it's time for Pick of the Week, and I've got something that'll help people searching for holiday items in particular here. So this is largely going to be useful to people who live in the United States, but for some of the products, it will work internationally. So let's say you're looking for a brand new iPhone 10 and you don't know where to find it and your local Apple store is sold out. Well, what you can do is you can go to this website called iStockNow.com, and it's got a list of all the retailers, including Apple stores and including non-Apple stores, so Best Buy and whatnot, and even goes into other countries where you might purchase an iPhone 10. And it says it's tracking 5,119 stores in 37 different countries. So it'll show you on a map, if you want to do it that way, to see near you where you can find an iPhone. And there's lots of green. So you can see here that relatively right now, the iPhone 10 is in stock at a lot of places. Like right now for Tycho here, who lives in Sweden, if Tycho were to venture over to Stockholm, he would see that the Apple Store in Sweden does have the iPhone 10 in stock.
Ooh, should I run over there and check that it's accurate?
You could, but it might take you a while, since the Apple Store is probably closed right now.
Yeah, it's just after midnight here.
Yeah. Another good thing that this works for that people might be interested in for the end of the year and the holiday season is the Super Nintendo Classic and the Nintendo Switch, because those are very popular devices this year. So if you're looking where you can find a Nintendo Switch or extra Switch controllers, iStock Now will also allow you to do that. The Switch is stocking at 15,814 stores in 14 different countries, and you can basically look around and see what's happening here. So you know, it's a good way of figuring out where these Switches are.
So interesting.
Doesn't look like we're tracking any Switch locations in Canada, which is unfortunately. But anyways, you can find this all at iStockNow.com. And this started off as a project last year when they were tracking the releasements of the iPhone 7 and the iPhone 7 Plus, because those were in short stock when they launched. So iStockNow was created, and this year it's expanded to many different products.
And there we have it.
All right, so what have you been up to in RS?
What have I been up to? Well, I got to admit, Shane, I was working towards 120 Slayer, and some time ago I gave up. It was too repetitive. But with Hasselmere Signet Ring as my carrot, so to say, as Mod Mark said.
You actually think you're going to get one of those?
Well, I'm famous for my RNG, but lately, I mean, you know the how many stages is it? The 5 or 6 stages of you're going through some a problem.
Grief.
First is denial, anger, and
accepting you have a problem.
Yeah, in accepting a problem. Right now, I'm in the denial stage that this must be a bug. And the reason is that my Luck of the Dwarves continually drops gold ore, something that I'm pretty sure Mod Timbo mentioned that Luck of the Dwarves will remove all the bad drops from the rare drop table when it drops something. And gold ore is by far the worst thing that can drop. It's only worth, like, I don't know, 6K. And you can't do anything with it. So
used to be real good for smithing.
Yeah, but not with a Luck of the Dwarves, please. Anyways, so I'm still having it all on 24/7, no matter what pro PVMer said that take it off, put on something better. No, I'm going to get that ring, but at the same time I'm making money, and I will buy that ring even if it costs me my bank, which is pretty close in doing. I mean, selling everything and having, well, the most amount of bank space I ever had in
my
life.
How much does it go for now?
1.8 billion.
No, I could afford that.
You make money from farming?
Oh no, I just have items that I'd cash out.
Oh,
look at that bank picture.
I better take a very close look at that bank picture then. Okay. Anyway, so lots of Slayer. I've gotten the energy back for 120 Slayer, slowly working towards it. I'm 114 Slayer at the moment and continuing towards 120 and what more. And I had a very emotional moment also during Christmas time, and I won't say more regards that matter.
Oh, I think we all have those from time to time. So, All right. Thank you, Tycho. I wish you luck on that ring. My personal bet is that you won't get it in 2018.
Because I will get it before 2018?
No. I don't think so.
Shane, you can at least pretend you want me to get it.
Oh, I want you to get it. I just don't think you will.
That doesn't encourage me, you know.
All right. Well, as for me this week, I broke out the Christmas outfit on RS. Have you gotten any of the Christmas piñatas?
Oh, yes. I've been taking really? Them out. Yes.
From Treasure Hunter.
Let's see. I got actually one from Treasure Hunter and one from the calendar. So, yes. Yeah. I actually got three red prizes today, but none of them were the piñata, unluckily.
Okay. Yeah, I haven't got any of them. I got two on the first day. I got the elf shoes and the Santa case, or rather the sack. But, you know, we already have a Santa suit from 2008. The color doesn't match with it. So I'm actually using the older Santa sack, believe it or not, because I don't know. That one just looks better with the whole Santa suit. So I got that. But aside from that, I've just been arc fishing and dancing around on RS trying to get these invention levels going. I think I should move to combat invention. I think that's probably a lot faster.
I mean, that's what I did. I disassembled a lot of god swords, especially Armadale for going towards that precise 5 perk.
Oh, yeah. You know, I was – oh, disassembled god swords. Okay. I have just been siphoning my tier 85 weaponry.
But god swords are cheap, Shane.
But I want to use ranged.
You can start throwing god swords.
I wish we could do that. I really wish we could. But
what kind of battle would that look like?
Yeah.
Something like, I could actually make a small art of that. Of that mind picture right there.
Okay. Okay. So you guys would say then this is actually destroy stuff?
Yes, because of two reasons. Number one, it's less XP to get, so it's more XP per hour. Number two, those components get really, really useful, especially if you disassemble at level 10. You got 4 times the components you would normally get, plus you have 0 junk chance, no matter if it's tier 70 or tier 90.
So I should probably go for Armadale crossbows then.
Unless you are confident that you know where you can find these components, I would go towards disassembling, and especially Armadale, because it gives you these Armadale components you won't find anywhere else except Armadale armor of weapons. Or, of course, if you are really, really lucky with the scavenger perk.
All right.
But it's not something I would... I actually have a lot of Bandos components. I have no idea what I'm going to use them on. So, but yeah, that's my recommendation.
Okie dokie then. Well, thank you for that, Tycho. I definitely learned something there in the What Have I Been Doing segment. But aside from that, just the arc fishing, but I'll probably move on to that very soon. So that finishes this episode of RSBNB Update. Thank you, Tycho, for stepping in at the last moment. And we'll be back next week for another episode featuring the Christmas quest and the Christmas event. So we look forward to that. In the meantime, if you want to catch up with us this week, you can do that by joining our friends chat, Bits Bytes. If you want to chat with us, we're also on Twitter at RSBNB, where we post stuff in the middle of the week. And if you want full show notes and to subscribe to the podcast to have it automatically delivered to you, just visit update.rsbnb.com and look on the left-hand side of your screen for a subscription method that suits your fancy. Until then, we'll see you next week, and have a good week, everyone. Thanks, Tycho.
Send in your fan mails. Bye-bye.